dying blood bond. I am Holy Ghost taught. I'm redeemed. I've been set free. Oh, I'm blood bond. I am Holy Ghost taught. I'm redeemed. I'm free indeed.
Shalom, this is Billy Brim and the voice of One Witness Radio broadcast. I'm really excited this week to share with you from a book that really was a It just taught me doing this book. You know, I was an editor for Kenneth E. Hagin from 1970 to 1980. I had the call of God to preach on my life since I was a little girl. And in 1980, I felt it was the time to go out. Brother Hagin did too, and he called me up in July of 1980 and laid hands on me and ordained on me and gave me papers to preach the gospel. Right away, I went with Jim and Kathy Caseman in August. I went to Russia. And when I got back from Russia, I was at home resting a bit. And a telephone rang, and we had a great big old house built in 1907. And it had a big country kitchen in it. And in those days, before cell phones and phones that you could carry around the house, you had to have long cords. So in our kitchen, we had this yellow telephone with this long, huge cord that would reach all through the downstairs and halfway upstairs. And the phone rang. My husband was sitting at a table there in the kitchen, and this really loud voice on the phone, he said, he didn't even say who he was. He said, "Can you do a book in a week?" I recognized it was Lester Sumrall. I said, "Brother Sumrall, no one can do a book in a week." He said, "You can if you work night and day." He said, "This book has to be out. Nobody knows what this is." Our embassy had been attacked. People had been, and they were in right then in capture. He said, "Nelson wants 6 months to do this book. I can't have it 6 months. I want you to come up here and we'll get this book out." Well, I came up there and we didn't get out in 6 months, but we got it out in a week. But we got it out in 3 weeks. It really could have been done better if we'd had a little more time, but that's the time we had. And the name of the book is called Jihad, the Holy War. We're making it available to you at the end of the broadcast. You can find out how to get it. Now, remember, this was done in 1980. I flew up to Lester Sumrall's, and I had a little apartment there on the campus. He wasn't like Brother Hagin. Brother Hagin just had these cassettes, and you just edited it to a book. He didn't bother you. He'd look over the manuscript, you know, but Lester, he didn't have all that. He did have some teachings he had done on it, but he had mainly magazine articles, manila folders, and he worked with me. And I'm telling you, I learned from God. Now I'm going to read you right now. This is Lester Sumrall's foreword to the Holy War. Now, remember, the title is Jihad, the Holy War. The subtitle is The Destiny of Iran and the Muslim World. This was 1980 we wrote this. How many years ago is that? 20 to 2000, 35 years. 35 years ago. Now listen. Here is his foreword. When the Ayatollah Khomeini, the religious and political revolutionary of Iran, donated to Arafat, the leader of the PLO, hundreds of millions of dollars to engage Israel in battle, it revealed that the deposed Shah of Iran was not the only rich man in the country. Khomeini, as an imam, a Muslim religious leader, possessed tremendous wealth in land and gold. More important, the millions of dollars given to support Arafat revealed that the holding of American hostages in Iran was jihad. The ancient Arabian Islamic declaration of holy war. Jerusalem is the center and heartbeat of the Middle East crisis. The jihad hopes to draw the whole world into this bloody vortex of prophetical warfare. Iran, having 4,000 years of recorded history, is the best vantage point to observe history and the ultimate destiny of the peoples of the region as revealed in the world's most reliable textbook, the Bible. To be ignorant of the religious convictions of the Ayatollah Khomeini is dangerous, religiously, economically, and politically. And the Ayatollah was alive when Brother Sumrall was writing this book, and I was helping him. We're going to be reading now from the book, and we're going to trace Iran in the Bible. Chapter 1, Elam, E-L-A-M, grandson of Noah, father of Iran. Lester Sumrall writes, Iran shocked the world and commanded the attention of its newspaper headlines and broadcast bulletins when it captured the embassy of one of the world's most powerful nations on November 4, 1979, and took hostage 63 citizens of the land of the free. Knowledgeable students of Bible prophecy were the least surprised at that terrible intrusion. They had been watching for a move from this ancient land, for neither modern Iran nor the Islamic world can escape their past history or future destiny. You're not a student of Bible prophecy, you say? How can you know what to expect from Iran and the Muslim world? My purpose in writing this book is to help you to know. Trace with me the history of Iran through the pages of the Bible. It's not difficult to do. It's not hidden. It's not beyond your grasp. In fact, you will be fascinated at how your understanding of current world events widens in the light of God's holy word. Iran is an ancient land. Iran, called Persia until 1935, when it was renamed by its then-Shah, has nearly 4,000 years of recorded and known history. The story begins with Noah's grandson, Elam. But let's go back to the beginning of man. Adam, the first human, knew God on a very personal one-to-one basis. Adam walked and talked with God. Adam knew how to worship the Elohim God in an acceptable manner. But Adam fell, and mankind with him. This was approximately 6,000 years ago. Some 2,000 years after the Eden catastrophe, only Noah knew God on a one-to-one basis. He preached and prepared for 100 years for the deluge God told him would cover the earth. No one outside Noah's family believed. What a treasure was carried in the ark that saved them. It was mankind's knowledge of God. At this point in time, Noah and his family were the only Homo sapiens on the planet Earth. They knew the true God and worshiped him. Noah's sons, Shem, Ham, and Japhet, left the ark with their parents with a tremendous respect for the living God and divine order. They heard the voice of God and witnessed the birth of the rainbow. God's promise not to destroy the earth again with water. They stood at Noah's altar with heads bowed as the God of the universe promised there would never be another worldwide flood. They heard God's promise of perpetually seed time and harvest. Shem, Ham, and Japhet also remembered how wickedly the people lived who were destroyed by the flood. What a tremendous memory bank. What knowledge to pass on from those three fathers to their offspring, the entire world's population. Bible genealogy after the flood is found in Genesis chapters 10 and 11. To Shem, Noah's son, Elam, Asher, Arphaxad, Lud, and Aram were born. Elam became a tribe, built cities, ultimately vanquished Babylon, and became the Persian Empire. Iran's history is traceable through this grandson, Elam. Elam was at least 1 year older than his brother Arphaxad. It is in Arphaxad's line that we find Abraham only 10 generations from Noah's flood. Shem. Noah begat three sons, Shem, Ham, and Japhet, Genesis 6:10. And then it names his sons. It names Arphaxad, Salah, and goes on down to Abraham. And we can trace these 10 generations. But many left the truth of God. Some began to serve idols. These relatively few years witnessed the Tower of Babel and the dispersion of the nations by language. in order for God to preserve the promised seed of the woman and fulfill his prophecy given at the Garden of Eden, he had to separate men, evil from good. God did this by confusion of language at Babylon. Less than 400 years after the flood, God spoke to Abram on a one-to-one basis and told him to leave Ur of the Chaldees, the area where the Assyrian, the Babylonian, and Persian empires would later spring up. It was Elamite raids that destroyed Ur of the Chaldees. Father Abraham fought with Iran. It was Jehovah God who spoke to Abraham and caused him to leave Ur of the Chaldees, a place where many had become worshipers of idols, the general area which would become Elam and Persia and Iran. The story of the flood passed through 10 generations. Don't look at the Bible with vast distances. I hold in my experience knowledge of 5 generations. I remember my grandfather well, my grandchildren well. I also remember great-grandparents. In only 10 generations after Noah, in order to separate evil from good, God demanded Abraham to depart from Ur of the Chaldees. His divine guidance brought him to the place that we now know as Israel. Several years after Lot left Abraham, the city-state of Sodom was besieged and captured by the kings of the Fertile Crescent. It is written in Genesis 14:1-3. It came to pass in the days of Aramaphel, king of Shinar, that's Babylon, Arioch, king of Elasar, and Chedorlaomer, king of Elam. It mentions 5 kings. One of them is the king of Elam, and they were joined together to fight in the Vale of Sidon. In this first recorded war in the Bible, we notice Chedorlaomer, king of Elam. He was the leader of a coalition of kings from the same area Abraham had departed at God's command. For 12 years, the 5 principal cities in the Jordan Plain, including Sodom and Gomorrah, had been made to pay taxes to Chedorlaomer and the other kings. In the 13th year, the cities rebelled. In the 14th year, the confederacy of kings, headed up by the king of Elam, came down to put down the insurrection. They smote Sodom and Gomorrah. They took all their goods. They smote the others that refused to pay. But they made a mistake. They took a captive Abraham's brother's son, Lot. When word of the capture reached Abraham, someone who escaped the battle came with the news to Mamre, where Abraham dwelled. Abraham took 318 servants of his own house, armed them, pursued the invading kings, and he divided his band. 318 of them, they are fighting the big, huge armies of 5 kings. He divided his band. He attacked by night. He chased the kings to north of Damascus, and he destroyed the powers of Persia in one night. When the king of Sodom came out to meet Abraham, and he thanked him for defeating these kings, he said, I'm going to give you some riches and some of the spoils. And Abraham said, no, you're not. He said, it was God who made me. I don't want you saying that you gave me even a shoelace. It was God who gave me this victory. The first step into biblical history for Iran was when it faced the man of God, Abraham, and its king, Chedorlaomer, was destroyed. We're going to be back tomorrow. We're going to be talking about Daniel and some of the things that happened more in Iran. And we'll get to Iran's future. But I would like to make available this book that I did with Lester Sumrall, which is so up-to-date and so informative today, Jihad, the Holy War. Just give us a telephone call at 1-800-972-3447, 1-800-972-3447, and request the book, Jihad, by Lester Sumrall. Shalom until tomorrow.